Welcome to Women in Comedy, the podcast, with your hosts, Jasmine
and Tao.
And today our guest is Georgina Gina. How do you...
Coppolis.
Jenny Coppolis.
She's Greek. we tried. We really did. Welcome. How are you today?
Thank you. Oh, I'm great, thanks. And thanks for having me. Such an honour, actually. Oh, wow.
Yeah, and Merry Christmas. Well, in a couple of weeks, everyone.
It will be Merry Christmas, yeah.
So we have a very special episode. We actually had some angel card readings done by Georgina earlier today.
Yeah.
So let's chat about that first. Firstly, before we discuss some of the results.
I'm happy with my results.
You're happy with the results? I was pretty happy with mine.
Romance is coming, apparently. And
yeah, for both of us.
Yeah.
They were very positive. Natalia, how did you first start the whole thing with angel card readings and all that kind of stuff? I mean, there must have been something that kind of prompted you to do it. Did it just happen? Or?
Yeah, no, it's quite bizarre looking back on it. It was a few years back, I'd say about 2010, 2011. I just sort of, you know, my intuition was like, you know, start doing tarot readings for myself, really. Mm. And I got a deck of tarot cards and I just sort of started, you know, looking into it. And I was, you know, seeing on Facebook, you know, and I was, you know, Doreen Virtue, she's like one of the big gurus out there, around angels and doing angel readings. And, you know, when things are sort of meant to be, you just get those hits from the universe, you know. One of your friends talks about one thing and another friend in another circle of friends completely unrelated to the first will probably bring up the same thing a few days later, and that's the universe going, hello, pay attention. So I got one of her books and I was reading it. Oh, what was it called? I thought it was the Angel Therapy Handbook.
Okay.
So this is a free plug. There was one point where it said, you know, as you start on the spiritual journey, there's a prayer you can say. It's really good to have another person with it that's going on the same journey, so you sort of bounce ideas off. Mm. And I remember it was on a Saturday night. I know, I wasn't doing anything on a Saturday night. Tragic. And I was reading it. It was about 9 p.m. And there's a reason why I remember this quite clearly. And I remember I was reading on the couch reading it, and I remember saying that prayer, and then afterwards thinking, yeah, right, like this is going to work. And the next day, and I shut my phone off overnight because the EMF, I just can't sleep when it's on. And I turned it on and I logged into Facebook. And the wife of a colleague that I was friends with, and the only reason we were friends is because they went overseas on holidays, and for me to see the photos, he said, look, just friend my wife and she posts all the photos.
Hmm.
And I was at a point where I was like going through an unfriending phase, and I was like, oh, we never talk. I might, you know, unfriend her. And I get a message from her and she says, I see you're into Doreen Virtue as well.
Uh-huh.
And it was about 15 minutes after I'd said that prayer, like the timestamp. And I just went, oh my God. And since then, and we're really good friends now, we've been chatting and, you know, and she's sort of helped me, like mentor me. She's intuitive as well, and she's more intuitive than she knows. She's going to hear this. She knows who she is. You really need to listen to yourself. She's really good. I got into it and she helped me, you know, was like a mentor and a friend to go on that journey as well. So, you know, slowly I started getting the decks and I started doing readings for myself, friends and family, and it wasn't until this year I just started getting the hints from my angels going, look, you know, start up your own little shop on Etsy, get out there, do readings. Mm. And, I've started my own Etsy shop called Butterfly Jophiel, free plug, and I did an expo last year, which is really good, and I did the Mind Body Spirit Festival this year, and I'm doing the Oz Paranormal and Spiritual Festival in September, which will be in past when this is televised, and hopefully that will go well as well.
Yeah. What was that experience like with the Mind Body Spirit Festival?
It was amazing because it was like non-stop readings, and you had to make sure that you grounded yourself in between the readings, because if you didn't, you'd be – it's – like reading you guys today, it's like I'm absolutely fine. But reading 15 people nonstop with just half hour break every few hours is very draining. on your energy.
Yeah.
Because you're sharing someone else's energy. You're taking on what they're feeling. And as an empath, you can really feel the sadness or you can feel the happiness.
Mm.
It's quite a lot of work. But it's not physical because you're just sitting there.
Yeah.
But it's all
that can be mentally energy. Exhausting.
Absolutely. Like I had the best sleep.
Yeah.
It was like Saturday and Sunday. Saturday night, best sleep. Sunday night, even better. Yeah.
Do you ever have those times where you have to tell someone something tragic or obviously you must?
Yeah, you've got to be careful how you say it.
Yeah.
I had one. I do get death predictions independent of this, and I don't tell people because you can't just walk up to someone and say, "Look, you'll be dead in 2 years."
Yeah,
I can't say that.
Yeah,
I do get timelines, and unfortunately, they're right. I wish I didn't.
Right.
And my father had that as well, and I know I got it from him. Mm. I also have pregnancy predictions. I love those. Get the best feelings. but I did have one client who had a son who was involved in narcotics.
Mm.
And she said, is he going to die? And I said, well, if he follows this path, he'll go. I mean, we're all going to die, but he'll go before his time.
Mm.
I had another client whose husband was diagnosed with cancer. And I could see when he was going to die, but it wasn't going to be anytime soon, thank goodness. But it will kill him eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So you do get those unpleasant things coming through, but you've got to deliver it tactfully. You've got to be careful how you say things because you don't know how someone's going to react.
Yeah. Did you have to do a course to read or did it just come naturally to you?
It came naturally. I also did a course I'm a certified angel card reader. I know people will be going, that's a lot of crap. I thought so too. But it's actually, I am certified, but it's actually really helpful. You get other psychics telling you, one who used to be a psychologist and another one who used to be a certified accountant that are doing this full time. And the things that you feel, the things that you see are actually validated, like during the reading. It's, you know, they could be like, oh, look, you could say anything and they'll say, oh, here's your certification. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, but there's things behind it. It's the intention behind you doing the readings. If you go in, you know, just to do it for money or to do it for ego-based reasons, it's not going to work. You can tell. But if you're doing that to be as of service, and in my case, I can't help it. It's there. I can't block it. I can feel things. I can see things. But Oh, it's up to me if I'm going to share it or not. Like in a reading, I'm going to share it. Yeah.
Do you find that the cards are in a way of clarifying things that you're seeing for someone?
Absolutely. Yeah, they clarify it. Like things I saw with you guys, like I'd be like, nah, that's not real or anything. But the cards come up, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, fair enough. And you're probably thinking, you know, there's the mathematicians out there will be like, oh, there's so many cards in a deck and you've chosen so many cards, so the probability of that card coming out is whatever. I can't work that out. But not necessarily. The law of attraction plays a role. And I have also found if you're negative, if you're confused, the cards are confused as well. You need to be clear with what your intentions are.
Yeah.
So they really do help.
And for anyone who's listening who's on the fence about these kind of things, I've had readings before and this is probably the best reading that I've had, being honest.
Thank you.
We both found that, I can't speak for you, Tal, but it seemed like you liked your reading as well.
Yeah.
So I felt like a lot of things that I picked up on for myself, like, that makes sense, yep, I understand that. Yeah. So sometimes it's you need clarification. Yeah.
I mean, if it was negative, I'll just say, oh, this is all crap.
Yeah.
But it was positive, so...
Yeah. Well, that's what you're feeling. You're feeling positive stuff. You know? You've got to share that energy.
Yeah.
It's there. You can't say, oh, I saw the justice card. You're going to end up in court with a court case. That's not what I'm getting. I'm getting, you know, there was balance there. You needed more balance being a Libra.
Yeah.
And it's a sign of Libra, the scales. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And also I like the way that you popped down a purple cloth.
Mm.
I love purple. It's I'm always drawn to that colour. It's my favourite colour. And various crystals everywhere.
Yeah.
Which is really nice before doing the reading because I'm not used to saying, or maybe I just don't remember when I go into other places and they've got it all set up, but there's always this thing about crystals. So how do you use crystals and white sage and things like that in your everyday life?
Well, crystals, it's interesting. You think of it as just rocks. Now, I come from a scientific background, chemistry background, so I'm like, yeah, I can see, like, you know, what the chemical structure would be or what have you, but everything has energy, especially even, like, you know, this table that we're sitting around, what it's seen and everything, it has energy that resonates with it. And every crystal, and that's where I get, you know, sort of like polar opposites, you know, the scientist in me goes, oh, no, it's just a rock, it's got that chemical composition. The other half says, yeah, but rose quartz harnesses romance. You know, it's really good for that. Moonstone is really good for, you know, harnessing your intuition. On myself, I have kyanite and, I'll show you. I've got kyanite and citrine.
We'll describe them. Citrine is a little bit
it's like
clear,
a yellow,
with like kind of yellow, yeah, in it.
That's good for finances, money, right? Citrine?
So it's also good for your self-esteem, okay, and for your solar plexus, because I find my solar plexus just gets clouded over, and that helps me sort of speak my truth.
Okay.
Kyanite is really good for opening all your chakras, and I find the combination helps me like deliver the truth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, better for me. I once had this combination and I met like the new boyfriend of my niece's, and well, they've broken up now. Yeah. And there's a reason I called him out. I called his bluff out on something, and I just went, we can't swear on this, can we?
No, you can.
Yeah. I said, look, he said something. I said, that is a load of BS. Now, I'm a Libra. I'm very passive aggressive. I would never come out. And I was like, why did I say that? Why did I react like that? And I was undressing, and then I was like, well, what's in my pocket? I'm like, oh. Well, that's, it was a load of BS.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So crystals, they do help with readings. And everyone's probably like, oh, it's a crystal ball. Well, actually, I found out you can't see anything in a crystal ball. It's the energy it harnesses and allows you to focus in getting, your information. Now, white sage, as I mentioned before, that's been used, as far as I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, the American Indians use it to clear energy.
Yeah.
And for ceremonies. And it's really great. You light it up and then you blow it out, and then it just keeps fuming like the smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And you take it around the house and you clear the energies. If there's any spirits that are around, you try and help them move on.
Mm-hmm.
You can also just put intentions out there. Mm-hmm. And I like to do that around my house. Like, I go over my bed and I'd say, you know, restful sleep, for true love. You could put abundance, you know, anything in there. Just be careful you don't get any little ash or embers that could start a fire. So you usually have a little plate underneath to catch anything.
Right.
You can do like the outside just to clear energy of the house. If there's been arguments, a lot of arguments, that's really good in clearing a home as well.
So you said you started off with tarot cards first, then you moved to angel cards.
Yeah.
What's the difference between the two?
Well, they're pretty much the same, only that angel cards are more you know, you harness the energy and then the messages from the angels.
Mm-hmm.
Tarot cards, you could probably do the same thing, and I think it's a personal thing between psychics when they do them. For me, I found them to be very negative. I had to prepare myself and sort of ask my angels with the traditional tarot cards for protection. With the angel tarot cards, I already know I have that protection. I still ask for protection as well. I found that with traditional tarot cards, they were more negative, and it felt easier for negative energies to come through.
Yeah.
And that's the thing when you're doing readings, and you can pick up on it, you've got to be careful what you're working with.
Mm.
So when you're, you know, communicating with the spirit realm in any case, there is negative energy out there, and people are like, oh, you're saying you believe in the devil and everything and all that negative stuff. Well, guess what? They exist. The universe is positive, negative. You've got the higher energies, lower energies. They do exist. What you believe is what you believe. There might be some Satanists out there going, hey, but you got to protect yourself.
That's true.
For what's coming through, because you can have, depending on who you go to, if they don't protect themselves, you could have some malevolent spirits coming through going, yeah, I'm your dead mother, I'm your dead father, but they're not.
Yeah.
And they're pulling your leg. Yeah, that stuff is out there.
Yeah. I've heard about those kind of things, like possessions and poltergeists and bad energies, and you hear about a lot of those things, especially if you watch a lot of The X-Files like I did. So that kind of stuff, I've never experienced it. I've always seen kind of just ghosts and picked up on good energies. But When you were quite young, I just wanted to ask, because I was similar myself, but when you were young, did you tend to see ghosts or spirits or pick up on energies and very sensitive to everything around you? Did you like
I was,
that?
But I didn't know why. Okay. And I, you know, if I didn't want to go somewhere or I didn't want to do something, I got sick. And I didn't know why. And you know what? As an adult, I still get sick.
Oh, yeah, it's your gut feeling, maybe.
It's your gut feeling. Yeah. And this is what I find. I don't know. I'm not a parent at this point in time as we're recording, but I'd be like, if I have children and my kids said, I don't want to go in that room because there's something in there, or your dog doesn't walk in there, there is something in there. Mm. You've got to believe it. And, yeah, as a child, I would pick things up. I remember going to relatives' places. I won't say who, but I just did not like their house. Mm. Or we'd be sitting there and it'd be dark and like, you know how you've got the door, you've got the window?
Yes.
So I'll just describe it to everyone. There's like the door frame and you've got a window at the top and it'd be dark. Mm. And I'd be like, there's someone going like this over the door frame looking at me or something. You know, yeah. And I was thinking, no, it's not. But I could feel there was something
some
there.
Some presence, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the vibes that you get around places, I imagine that you're probably quite similar to myself, and as I tell you, seem quite intuitive too, mm-hmm. where you get that feeling of either attachment or detachment around certain people or certain things, and a good or bad feeling.
Yes.
And it's always important to follow that. There's been times where, and I'm sure none of us are alone here, where you didn't follow your gut feeling and then found out, oh, that person wasn't right for you, or that friend betrayed you, or something went wrong, and you're like, okay,
yeah,
need to listen.
Exactly.
Your body will literally tell you things.
It will.
Yeah. All the time. And I urge our listeners to pay, if that's the one thing that you take from the podcast, write that down. Always trust your body. It will. If you get a sick feeling before going into a certain building, I don't suggest you go there and, you know, make an excuse, cancel, do something. Yeah.
If you want to test your gut feeling, and I only found this out, I was in Athens a few years ago, and there was a central place where the Gestapo in World War II would take Jews or spies, resistance, and would torture them.
Ooh.
And, yep, that place is still there. I could take you there. it's in the central part of Athens. It's near the Parliament House. Oh, I don't remember what it's called. And they've got this door on the outside as a commemoration of that spot. I got the worst tingles around there. I wanted to cry. It was worst energy in that place. So if you want to test your intuition, go somewhere where you know something's happened and go somewhere positive, and you'll see the difference.
Well, yeah, it's like go to Auschwitz and then go to New York City and go check out the Empire State Building. Hey, difference! I've only been to one of those. I'm like, I don't know, those poor people. Yeah, that would have been quite full on. And how do you protect yourself? You gave me some tips earlier on how to do that, and I think that will help.
I find shielding helps. Now, I was at a point where I was putting shields up, and people are probably like, you know, you put a shield up, like, I can do my charge. it's more like a bubble around you, but it's a peaceful protection, and you put the intention out there. Love can enter and leave. Negativity can leave from me, but negativity cannot come in. Mm. And you usually regularly have to put them up. They usually say one in the morning, one at night. It's like, you know, going out in the rain. You're going to put an umbrella up.
Yeah.
It's like that type of protection. So you imagine this huge bubble around you of white light.
Yeah.
You can imagine a pink shield is really good for loved ones around you. Especially if there's a lot of gossiping, family gossip, it drains you, it really does.
Yeah.
That's really good for that. Green's good for healing, orange for creativity, pardon me. Blue for communications. One that I use often is a mirror ball, and that's against, you know how you got sometimes you just feel some negative emotions?
Yep.
Mm. And you're like, where on earth is that coming from? It could be from someone harboring negativity towards you.
Well,
the mirror puts it up, and they actually can see themselves, a reflection of themselves energetically, and they might sort of catch themselves out on
that. Ooh, I so want to try that.
Yeah.
Because I do pick up on negative vibes from some people who, when you think you're finished with someone and then you get that vibe, it's like, oh. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, so it's just like being able to visualize that you've got white light or green light or whatever color you need to work on.
Yeah. And you can put layers on top of each other, but, you know, you got to trust your instinct, what will work best for you. Yeah, don't put like 20 layers on top, or just say, oh, shields up like in Star Trek, because then nothing will get in or out, and you can block good opportunities that are coming your way.
Mm.
So you want to say it's a peaceful protection so all the good stuff can come in.
And for anyone who might be sceptical, as you said, you have a scientific background,
mm-hmm.
What harm does it do? None.
None.
It's just imagining colours, yay.
Yeah,
I send colour, I call it colour healing to people. Like I pick up on their vibe or homeless people, et cetera, and I just, in my head, I just send it. Whatever colours to them that come to me, and doesn't do me any harm. It might help them. They don't need to know.
Yeah.
So it's like whatever. It's healing.
And if you know, you can send healing to others, but their higher selves might not want it, or they might not want it. So then you just put the intention out there. Well, if they don't want it, send it to where it's needed.
Yeah.
And the angels will just direct it there.
Because some people will block it. Do you do a lot of healing as well? Do you do that kind of thing, or is it something you'd like to get into?
You know, that's the thing. I'm getting those hits again about being a healer and doing healing, but I never considered myself as any form of healer or, you know, like doing medical intuition of some sort. But it's sort of coming my way. Things are sort of popping in, so maybe in the future. Not sure.
It's interesting how you said you come from a science background, but in the more logical-minded people, but then you're also using your intuition and gut senses and getting involved in that spiritual realm. Quite unusual for someone with that sort of background.
It is. You know, it's probably like everyone out there is going, rip up your degree.
what kind of science did you study?
Chemistry.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's strange, but you can't help what you get.
Mm.
And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are of that logical mindset that do block their intuition.
Mm.
And then I'd say don't. I mean, it's hard to come out of the closet because I'm literally not coming out of the closet, the spiritual closet. And people out there, oh, I didn't know that about you. And they're probably like, oh, I don't like that. I do like that. That's fine, you know, each to their own. But I'd say it's interesting in that I did find when I was doing research that certain experiments weren't working, and that's 90% of science.
Mm.
And then you get that hit going, why don't you just try that chemical over there? I'm like, yeah, all right. Give that a go. Oh, my gosh, I got a result. What is this result? And you go into it, and you actually find something. Mm. And then when they ask you, and when you're giving a seminar or you're presenting your work, what made you decide to use that ligand, as we call it, or that chemical, and you're like, and you can't say, well, my angels told me. I've got a gut feeling.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, you know, there was, you actually have to go back to the literature and say, did anyone else try this? You're like, oh, phew, they did. I was like, oh, I came across this paper. Yeah. I thought I'd give it a go.
Are you like, still interested in chemistry?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's still there.
Still passion for you?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Cool. Speaking of passions, and because it is Women in Comedy, the podcast, everyone's like, this is all nice, but did she do comedy?
Yeah.
But you do. We met through improv.
Yes, we did. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about your journey with improv.
Improv came to me when I was at uni. You'll be surprised at how it came. It was back in the mid to late 90s. Giving my age away, and it was back in New City Uni when you had the old Manning bar that actually had, it was a bar that had, you know, atmosphere. It was an old building. It was lovely. And I remember going with friends to hearing about, oh, they do this, you know, improv show, theatre sports actually. It was, theatre sports. Oh, let's go, you know, at lunchtime. And I go, oh, what's theatre sports? I'd heard about it back at school, but I was like, oh, yeah, crap. Yeah, whatever. Oh, drama. I'm a dramatic teenager. And I absolutely loved it. And I was like, no, they make all that stuff up. It's like, how on earth did they do that? And I was just fascinated. And I think it was like in second year at uni. And they said, look, if you want to give it a go, just come over to Wentworth on Fridays after lunch and give it a go. And it was back then when Adam Spencer was running it. And it took me a while to get the courage up to go. And I remember going in there and they're like, all right, get up there, let's do a, you know, 1-minute scene, 2-minute scene. And I just fell into it. I don't know how. And I absolutely loved it. So I was doing it for about a semester or two back then.
Okay.
But then I got into third year and I was doing a double major and labs were about 5 to 6 hours long. And when improv was running, or theatre sports was running, so that's when I stopped doing it.
Mm.
And it wasn't until, I'd say about 2014, 2013, like the idea, I was at the point where I wanted to do something more creative and be more balanced. That was coming up a lot for me. So I was like, well, I really love doing theatre sports. You know, do people still do it? That's how I was away from the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, Improv Australia is running courses. Yeah. And this is before LMA and ITS had started up. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I signed up for courses in 2014 and I went through all four levels and did the Cranston Cup that year. That was pretty cool. And then in 2015, I signed up doing Cindy Tonkin's Likewise.
That's how we met.
That's how we met, yeah. So I've been doing that ever since. And now I'm doing, you know, in doing Likewise, you know, I went from short form straight into long form. Mm. And there were a lot of people there that, you know, been doing long form for ages.
Yeah,
and
I'm like, yeah.
I know nothing.
I hear you. Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. And it was because they were, like, the experienced guys had my back and they helped me survive up there and not look like an idiot, even though I look like an idiot anyway. And they really helped me with that. And I thought, you know what, I needed to do some courses, you know, just to go back to the beginning and build it up again. So as of last semester, I started LMA. Mm. So I did level one last semester and doing level two now. Hopefully, do level three.
So that's some long form training for a regular, regular listeners know, other people might not know. So, Chicago style.
Yes. Yes.
And actually, you did some training with Sophie Long, who was on the podcast a few months ago.
Yes, I did. She was my level one teacher.
Yay. How was that? Lots of fun.
So cool.
I went to your graduation performance. I loved it.
It was amazing. Like, you know, a lot of the people in our class didn't know what they were getting into. I knew what I was getting into. Yeah. And I have to say, I remember our first class, and Sophie said, look around, you're going to be best mates with the guys around you. And I'm like, yeah, right. I'm like, I don't know, I don't make friends that easily. And I have to say now, we're pretty close. Like, we were a really solid unit. We were an ensemble by the end of the course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Sophie really encouraged that. That's what I loved about it. And how and her enthusiasm and how she would, like, I was more experienced than my classmates, but she would encourage everyone and let everyone grow in their own way. Mm-hmm. And with me, she would push me beyond my limits.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, why are you making this so hard? I'm so crap at this. And she's like, no, you're doing well, but I want you to go further. I want you to learn this. And, yeah, that was really good. So I really enjoyed that.
Sounds like a great teacher. Well, we know that she's great. But
how has improv helped you in your daily life?
It's brought, creative balance for me. It's allowed me whenever I give presentations at work. I'm very, as I said, a perfectionist. I like to rehearse beforehand.
Yeah.
So I would be, you know, at home and rehearsing the talk that I'd be giving. But instead now I'm just doing PowerPoint presentations and I'm like, okay, I'm going to talk about this and that. And I'll just sit down and I have the confidence to stand up in front of everyone and just wing it. And it's like, no one knows what I'm talking about. I know what I'm talking about. I can't make a mistake. And you just, I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about that. And I actually have found that I've been giving more engaging presentations. I haven't had one guy fall asleep. I know, that sounds contrary. But he always falls asleep. And I had the guts to nearly, but I didn't shut up and go, wake up. But I found it gives me that self-confidence.
That's good.
To, give better talks.
Well, speaking of winging it, because this will be a wonderful segue. I think you know where I'm going. You're also a female pilot, yay! As opposed to male pilot. You're a multi-talented lady.
Oh, thank you.
Has that always been a passion of yours?
It has. Like from a young age, I'd just be looking up at the sky.
Yeah.
And I think my parents had something to do with that because they, you'd have planes flying over and they're going, yeah, which is grandma in Greek. And they're like, you need to get into one of those to go see grandma. Okay. So whenever I'd see an airplane, I wouldn't be like, plane, like I do now. I was then, yeah. So there's like a lot of photos, like childhood photos. I'm standing there just looking upwards. Yeah.
What's the process like to become a pilot?
Well, you can do it quite a few ways. One is to go on either a full-time course or, do it by your own way, part-time, pay as you go. The difficulty with doing it in the latter way is that you like flying is, you know, you incorporate that third dimension in your movement, and humans were not designed to fly. Mm. I mean, that's just basically it. So when you get up there, it's a different world. It's a fantastic world, but it's a different world, and you need to keep going up there to keep yourself current.
Yeah.
And even, you know, professional pilots who fly all the time, if they take a leave of absence, either maternity leave or, you know, life happens and you can't fly for a bit and you get back into it, you're pretty much back at square one. You don't forget it, but you become rusty. Right. So you really need, I'd say you'd really need to go.
It's not like riding a bike then.
It is. When you get up there, you remember everything, but... I was told once that, you know, by a pilot himself from the Air Force, he said, when you get in the air, you only use 60% of your brain. For some reason, you lose 40% capacity. So you're already at extreme capacity and you're so focused. Right. That's such a thrill to get things done. So you really need to be on top of things. Yeah. The process of getting to that standard, I mean, you can go into the Air Force, you can go general aviation, you can go into airline academies, self-study, like all self-funded study. You can go through TAFE, you can go through, there's a multitude of avenues. And the really cool thing is that pilots now are teaching their children at a very young age how to fly. Cool. And you get, you know, students who are getting their pilot's license at 15 or going before even they drive a car.
Yeah. What avenue did you take? How did you get your pilot license?
I went to uni. I got my degree, got a job, saved up, then went into it. Right.
Awesome. How long did it take to get the license?
It took me about 4 years because I was going from paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
And I found that just flying on the weekends and, you know, if you have weather as well, coming into it, it could be 2 or 3 weeks between lessons, so you're taking one step forward to 1 to 2 steps back sometimes. You know, it depends on the individual. But yeah, it took me about 4 years to get my private license.
Do you fly? When was the last time you've flown?
I have to say I've been on the ground this year due to funding reasons, but I've been doing some self-study. Can't wait to get back in the air. I'm starting to get really itchy.
Have you travelled a lot too? I know you've been to Greece.
Yeah.
Where else have you travelled?
Actually, just Greece. Yeah.
Where would you like to travel?
Oh, everywhere. I have a lot of family in Greece, so that's why I go back often to there. Mm-hmm. The danger is that you get trapped with your family, which is a good thing. It's a blessing. But if you want to travel elsewhere, it's a bit, difficult.
Yeah.
So, I'd love to go to America. I haven't been to America. Mm-hmm. Some parts of Asia would be good. I'd love to go to other parts of Europe. I have to say Africa and South America do not attract me as much at this stage, but probably in the future. I have one thing I have put it out there in the universe that will happen is to go to the 7 wonders of the world. So, you know, go to Incas, go to Great Wall of China, pyramids, Acropolis I've been. In different parts of the world.
The Acropolis, something. I know the one, I've seen it.
Yeah.
They were doing some work on it or something. There's always excavations going on in Greece.
Yeah,
and the tour guide said to us a few years ago, as soon as that happens, they find something else because Greece is so ancient, and then they have to stop. No, can't tour here. We have to now dig this up, and they are sorry.
Yeah, pretty much.
How do you say sorry in Greek?
Tsunami, but yeah.
Yeah. Not again. That poor country. It's not good for tourism.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's quite fascinating.
Yeah.
Quite fascinating. Yeah. Speaking of study and such, we have a piano here, but I know you didn't feel comfortable enough. But did you grow up playing piano, or is that a new thing for you?
No, I grew up playing the piano. I started about 7 years old, and then I took a break for a year or two because I started it was at a music shop, and I remember they put the letters inside the notes, like it's like C, D, E, F, G or whatever. So I just memorized or learnt C, D, E, F, G. So when they took the letters away from the notes, I just stare at a blank, you know, a page with music and go, what? What's that? They just did not teach me properly. I don't know. It just didn't work for me. And I think it was about a couple of years after that I found a teacher in Punch Bowl, and and I just took it from there. And I went up to 8th grade when I was at uni, and I failed the exam. Yes, I will admit that, because I did a double major that year. And 8th grade piano is quite difficult. Mm. So I left that and I just tinkered over the years and I thought, well, I've got a bit of spare time now. And I was like, oh, I'll start getting back into it. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I've been getting back into it. See if I can get that eighth grade certificate. Yeah.
Yeah. So how's that been, getting back into piano?
It's been good. It's quite, again, as like with improv, it balances me out. I guess over the years I didn't express that creative side. And I urge people, whatever their creative thing is, whether drawing, music, whatever, just do it, because it really helps balance your life out. And I find it quite cathartic and quite therapeutic. Mm. Yeah, except scales. Yeah.
It sounds like you're doing a lot. I mean, the improv and then music as well, and readings. Is there any other hobbies you have or interests that you haven't yet pursued?
No, that's it. For now, yeah.
Where do you see yourself going in the future, just with your life?
Oh, gosh.
Like, have you done your own questions. Readings? Have you done readings on yourself?
Oh, all the time, yeah. And I find your angels block it to a certain point. Mm-hmm. You can put the intention, but it just will not be clear because, like you can say, oh, 10 years from now, it won't show up because you can make so many choices between now and then. And things can change. I could probably go up to, I'd say, 6 months, a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'll give me an idea. But, yeah, I can't see timelines for myself.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I get that too. And I guess it makes sense. If we see too many things for ourselves in the future, one, we might spoil the surprise, and two, if we see certain things and they seem negative, then we stress. But then later on when they happen and you look back, you're like, oh, I understand why that bad thing happened, because then that good thing could happen.
Absolutely.
So that's why you only see what you need to see. Everything you need to know is revealed to you in the right time, space, and sequence. I think that's a Louise Hay affirmation.
Yeah, that's right.
So occasionally when I'm stressing, I go, everything I need to know is revealed to me in the right time, space, and sequence. I swear that helps so much, so much, because I used to get really anxious and worry about things, and worrying actually doesn't serve any real purpose.
It doesn't, and it's just...
Worrying doesn't mean you care. It's worrying does not mean you care. I grew up in that kind of culture where I worry means I care.
Mm.
Which it's a nice thought, but actually it's not the right way to do it. Learn the hard way.
You do. Yeah. And we're all human, and even if you think you've learned it, you'll still fall back on that sometimes. Oh, yeah.
Can never stop learning. Yeah. Never stop learning.
Yeah.
So with your – back to the pilot thing, I was curious. So you can fly private planes, but what if you wanted to do that commercially? Would you like that to be your career, your day job, to take over your day job?
Yeah, I would. I would like to do that. And that's where, I'm doing the further study.
Mm-hmm.
I just need a few more hours to go for my flight test for that. And then there's another set of exams that I'm studying for now, but it's what am I doing to myself?
Who would you want to fly for?
Oh, gosh.
Put it out there.
Which airline?
Okay, I'll put Qantas, I'll put Olympic, and there's probably pilots going, you mad? I'll put Cathay, and Emirates are sort of the gold standard now because they really take care of their pilots. Yeah, yeah. And Etihad's pretty good too. So I would like, the top line airlines. But the thing I fear with that is that with airline flying, you sort of lose some of the handling that you have with the smaller aircraft, unless you regularly fly the smaller aircraft and sort of, there's this saying I'll share with you. You have the student pilot looking at the pilot who flies a Citation, which is like a small jet, and he's like, oh, and he just sighs. And then you have the Citation pilot looking at the airline pilot going, oh. Then you have the airline pilot looking at the fighter pilot going, oh. And then you have the fighter pilot looking at the space shuttle pilot, the astronaut, going, oh. And then you have the space shuttle pilot looking down at the student pilot going, oh, those were the days. Yeah, satisfied.
It's all perspective, isn't it? It's all...
Yeah.
The grass is always greener, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm. So, we'll put it out there. We'll see how we go.
Yeah, I've heard good things about Cathay Pacific. I haven't actually flown with them, but I've heard that they are very good to their customers. But then sometimes I hear things that about airlines that they're good with their customers but not so good with the pilots. But maybe that's a lot of the American airlines.
Right.
We hear all these tragic things. For instance, in Michael Moore documentaries, I heard that the pilots there, they spend a fortune in their training and then they don't make much money and they often have to take on a lot of other jobs. Yep. But I imagine in Australia it's different. Is each country
it's,
different?
I can't vouch for the airlines, but it is, yeah, it is a hard job. You will not get paid as much starting out. Mm-hmm. The main aim when pilots get jobs is either to get charter or go into flight instructing is to get your hours up. Mm-hmm. And in aviation, it's a numbers game. You need to have the hours and the experience to get into the airlines, to get the good paychecks. And you get big airlines like Cathay or Emirates that prefer that you've done the time in previous airlines. So, you know, other airlines have spent the money to train you on the types. So when you get to their airline, yeah, sure. I was trained, you know, by Rex to fly a Dash 8, or Qantas Link will take me on to do as a captain on a Dash 8, or probably first officer and then a captain. And from there you just progress. Yeah. Yeah.
It does seem like quite an expensive thing to learn, and we'd like to know that the people flying the planes are, you know, well looked after, because, you know, safety first. And I'd like to do more travelling, please. You know, I don't want to die. I do have a lot of respect for flight attendants and for pilots, so I really do.
It's a hard job. I'd say flight attendants are taking the brunt of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, dealing with all the passengers, the pilots, you know, 100 feet on takeoff, autopilot on.
Yeah.
And an autopilot off on the landing.
For sure.
Yeah.
If everything goes smoothly in between, you know.
Yeah.
No diversions or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, travelling is pretty stressful, so you've got to deal with a lot of stressful people around you. So
that's true.
Pretty tough.
Screaming children.
Flight attendants.
Yeah, that's a flight attendant.
No, I wouldn't do that job. Poor flight attendants. I'm always nice to them. I'm always nice to them. I don't want to make their job any more difficult than it has to be. Because they travel around the world, and I think, I don't know their schedules, but a lot of time they don't really land in one place for more than like a day or two, and then they're off again. I guess you wouldn't have jet lag anymore because you just get so used to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's now new laws that have come in for fatigue. So wherever they are, depending on the time zone displacements, they have to have a certain amount of rest time before the next duty and starts up. And CAS is constantly changing that at the moment. So for everyone, so for different classes of pilots, like agriculture, flight instructors, airline pilots, and what have you, so that fatigue management is taken care of, because it's a big safety component.
It is.
You know, being fatigued, you could miss things just on the instruments.
Yeah, and then you've got all those people on the plane, and well, that's most for the pilots. We don't want them to get fatigued.
Yeah.
Have another Red Bull, please.
Highly advised, no.
No, I'm kidding.
Just going back to the psychic readings, I was asking that question, do clairvoyants visit other clairvoyants? And you said yes.
Absolutely.
So did they... when they approach you, did they reveal that they are a clairvoyant?
No, they do it at the end. They all do it at the end. And as you go along with doing readings, you start getting symbolism and you understand what, you know, you see symbols and what they mean. Mm. And now I know if I'm excessively exhausted, that person's clairvoyant, because the energy sharing is just much more. It just feels like a much more of a connection. But a lot of clairvoyants go see other clairvoyants, and clairvoyance is like sort of a general term for intuitive people, because when you do readings for yourself, you're like, ah, I should be right. And you're like, oh, no, maybe not. But sometimes you have that self-doubt and you keep reading, and if you have that self-doubt, you're not going to hear what you're supposed to hear. So, you go out and you see another person who's more objective, doesn't know where you come from, and sometimes you see the same thing, you're like, okay, I was seeing the right thing in the first place. I'm finally getting the message that I'm supposed to get.
Okay.
It's just confirmation for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So do you visit other clairvoyants?
Yeah, I have, yeah. Actually, before I did the Mind Body Spirit Festival, the day before I was working, I went and saw a medium. I just want to clarify. I was just like, I just want clarity. What can you say? Yeah. Because I'm not getting the messages that I wanted. Because I was just so... It's like when you're in the middle of something, you can't see the, you know...
Forest for the trees.
Forest for the trees, that's the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you just need a bit of perspective.
It's like when you're in a bad situation, everyone else is trying to help you and you're like, you guys don't really care, and just pushing everyone away, and then later on going, sorry, guys. So it's kind of that kind of thing.
It's kind of like that.
Yeah. Did you have any more questions, Tal? Sounds like if I had any other questions. Did you have any questions?
Oh, no. Everyone asked that question. I'm like,
No, that's all right, isn't it? Or if you had anything you wanted to say before you wrap up the recording.
Oh, just thank you for having me. It's like women in comedy. I'm like, oh, wow, that's good. Cool.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for coming on. Having the readings is amazing.
Oh, my pleasure.
And you're always welcome to come over and play the piano. I'm sure my landlord won't mind. So when you get confident, you want to play around in it. Do you own a piano? Or
I do. Yeah, it's an upright like that one. It's about 80 years old, 90 years old.
That's
nice. Yeah, I play, but I don't know my pieces very well.
Yeah.
And I don't want to offend any pianists.
Yes.
So really, you're all that? No. Go back and practice.
Because we could have had some intro music for a change, but if you're not at that level,
Next time, maybe, confidence or something.
Probably have you back on.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thank you again for coming on the podcast, Georgina, and I will post some links to your Facebook page so that people can book a reading. Come on, guys, you know you want one.
That'd be lovely. Anytime. It'd be my pleasure.
And have a lovely Christmas.
Yes, Merry Christmas.
Thank you, everyone. You can find us in the usual places, iTunes, Facebook, Twitter.
Bye.
Let me press stop. Okay, bye.